Well, we'll find out right now, because the man joining us on the line today is the man who is at the pinnacle of all things Spanish sports journalism. It is, of course, Mr. Graham Hunter joining us on the line to talk about the La Liga action from the first 2 weeks of the season. Graham, how are you, my man?
Well, I'm speaking to you from my apogee. Pinnacle so last year. Apogee, I like to say, but apart from that, I'm dandy and ready to rock.
Fantastic. We're all glad to hear that you're doing well and good. And I don't know, would you describe yourself as being as on the same kind of level as Atletico Madrid and their start to the season right now? I mean, fantastic opening two games for them.
I like to share their ethos. I agree. I think you need to factor in the Super Cup first leg. And I think that principally, we've not seen great developments. And that's, I mean that in a positive way. But they've won 5 trophies in the last 3 years. And there have been really common identifiable elements right through their work and play. Diego Simeone, I don't think, is a particularly complex coach or man manager. And again, I mean that positively. He's somebody who, And this, people might be surprised to find that this is rare. He's a coach and a manager with very clear thoughts, a very clear philosophy. Now, that should be the case all the time, but it isn't, and that often confuses players. Simeone is not only crystal clear about what he wants the daily working environment to be like, what the priorities are, and how he wants to see that work displayed on the pitch. He's not only good at communicating it, he's also a disciplinarian. And that, over the years, since he came in, you know, in mid-season, just before Christmas, in a pretty horrible situation, not one that Atletico were unused to, but nonetheless an alarming situation, the trajectory has been constantly upwards, but the consistency has been, you can identify his team. You know, irrespective of who's picked, you know what you're going to get. And now's Well, so do the opposition. They know that they'll be worked off their feet. They know if they're not there to compete really aggressively in a sporting sense, they'll be beaten. But little by little, Simeone's mob are ticking off the really important top of the agenda items. Win trophies. Yes. Get back in the Champions League. Yes. Renew the coach's contract. Done. Listen to what the coach said when he was renewing it in private, and then what he said in public. Give me stability. That was his key message over and over again. He wasn't one of these coaches who said, look, either hint at or say, I know Falcao's going, but so now I want 50 million, 60 million to replace him. He didn't say that. He said, give me stability. So what do? They kept the rest of the squad together. They added Leo Baptistao. They added David Villa. They managed to retain Courtois, who I think, you know, for me, is in the top 4 or 5 keepers in the world, that Chelsea can't find a space for him. I'm not going to ridicule them, because Cech is enormously important. He's a leader. But it's very, very strange that Courtois can be kept out on loan. And therefore, I don't think for students of Atletico Madrid there's been a great surprise this season, but the enjoyment factor for all of us who like teams who roll their sleeves up is that we're getting really good football from Diego Costa, who's patently improved in confidence. We're getting very good football from Arda Turan, who the rumour said was a possible departure. And the market isn't closed, Oliver, so let's not say done deal and no more business in or out. But I like watching them. I like what they stand for. And you may or may not have noted it in the ESPN column I did to begin the season before the kickoff. I said that it's not out with the bounds of possibility that in a season of transition for both Real Madrid and Barcelona, Atletico Madrid might become title candidates. But what I say with emphasis is that's what they have to believe they are. And that is irrespective of what he says in public. Diego Simeone will be saying to his people, if we work hard enough, there is a possibility that we're a surprise candidate to win this title.
I mean, with Diego Costa, much was said about him taking on some of the responsibility from Falcao and leading this front line, if you will. Do you find, I mean, you say he's playing with a little bit more kind of freedom. Do you think that is because the kind of he's not playing a second fiddle role to Falcao? Him and David Villa seem to be on very much a similar playing field in terms of stature at the club.
Yeah, Yeah, I take your point. I think that's arguable, yes. I think that it is something that he has needed. Remember, this is a guy who has been shunted around Spanish football for a long time. It's taken a great deal of time for Atletico Madrid to vest full trust in him. But it also goes so far as to look beyond whether this has had a fillip effect to him, you know, that Falcao's not there. I'd say he began to earn this right to have parity with anybody at the club last season, because broadly, and I say broadly because there were exceptions, particularly the Sevilla games, he began to show maturity. This is not particularly, you know, it's a guy who is still relatively young. He began to be more effective on the pitch, in that he has always had an enormous capacity for work. He's very privileged in his physique for modern day football, and that he's quick but extraordinarily robust. You know, he can certainly knock players over, but his touch can also be exquisite. I think that if you combine the possibility for him to occupy centre spot at Atletico Madrid with the fact that his personal and football development were already meriting him that, that's the word I would use. His growth, his promotion and status is based on merit, not just opportunity. Then that's a happy set of circumstances. Whenever in football, Oliver, I've found, at least in my reporting career, whenever you find a combination of there being a vacuum but something perfect to step in and fill it, and then you get very positive, powerful results.
For Atletico, they've obviously got the Super Cup second leg this weekend coming up against Barcelona. Wonderful goal from David Villa in that first game, and a great game of football, thoroughly entertaining. But was it an opportunity missed, if you will, to capitalise on a Barca side that's slightly weakened? You know, we're going to have Messi in this squad again, and Neymar potentially starting as well in midweek together with Lionel Messi. Did Atletico miss their chance to get one over Barca?
Well, no, they definitely didn't. They might. I know what you mean. I think you meant the first way you said it, which is they missed a chance because, you know, they were distinctly on top. Leo Messi was a passenger. Barcelona are far beyond the time when physically they can play with 10 men and look as good. Yeah. It used to happen in the early years under Guardiola. But principally, I would say that for two reasons. It isn't simply a Guardiola factor. This group is physically, psychologically very, very tired. It's been battered over the winning years. They would never swap the experiences they've had for more rest, but it does present a bill. And beyond that, I think that because other teams researched them so well and know exactly how to do them damage, it was impossible for Barcelona to be as competitive as they would have liked in the first half against Atletico Madrid, because Messi wasn't right, just simply wasn't right. And therefore, Atletico playing good, confident football, taking the lead earlier on, there was a clear opportunity at the Calderon. And the Calderon was a cauldron of noise. It was fantastic. Old-style football, it's very often, for Northern Europeans at least, I can't comment, and I haven't been to that much sport in North America, but we like our atmospheres hostile, within the bounds of legality, but hostile. And that's what you get at the Calderon, and it was magnificent. But Barcelona are resourceful and tough mentally, and when Fabregas came on and Neymar was added, it was a much more fluent performance. They ended, as they so often do, on the front foot. If Barcelona are having a tough night, home or away, and this goes for Spain too, and you don't put them to the sword within an hour, look out, because you won't be able to keep up your rhythm and they will augment. So the key thing that I meant, without being pedantic, was that this game at the Camp Nou is one where Barcelona come to it with Messi's fitness, and I struggle to see that he should play. That's my opinion. It's not a medical fact, but this is a recurring problem that he's had since the Paris Saint-Germain Champions League quarterfinal. Mm-hmm. He played football for charitable purposes all through the summer. He had to be invalided out of the Argentina game in Italy. He's been taken off, only once injured, which was against Atletico. And therefore, I think that his physical well-being is more important in this particular time. I think Barcelona had proven in the last 17 games without Messi, they've won 14 and drawn 3. But the opportunity is there for Atletico Madrid, because they look quick on the break. They have a squad. It was shown at the weekend in the derby against Rayo Vallecano that that when they brought on Thiago, but particularly Raul Garcia, somebody that Carlos Queiroz was trying to persuade Sir Alex Ferguson to sign for Manchester United, you know, both of them got goals. That's a hell of a thing when you can bring on, you know, bench midfielders and they both had goals. That's something that tells me that if physically Atletico Madrid can play cannily and play quickly on the break, anybody who's been watching Gerardo Martino's tactics will say that he wasn't lying when before he joined, he said, you know, my philosophy is that I want my, you know, my last defender to be able to look over his shoulder and see something like 35, 40 yards between him and the goalkeeper. They play a very high line, and in the only home game so far competitively against Levante, Oliver, there were large chunks of the game. Okay, Levante weren't a particularly good test. There were large chunks of the game when Victor Valdes was the only player in his half. I repeat, the only one. Mm. Now, Atletico Madrid and Simeone are clever enough to see how to play on the break. They, you know, it was proven many, many times, but an example about a decent breakaway stemming from a nice turn by Falcao on the halfway line came in the cup final when Real Madrid were 1-0 and Atletico broke up the field and scored a very good Diego Costa goal. The key is Atletico Madrid are fit enough, clever enough, confident enough, and they have enough goals to damage Barcelona and to win the Super Cup. They have that capacity. Whether Barcelona are willing to lose two consecutive Super Cups to a Madrid side, I have my doubt. This is a team of great character, great resourcefulness. And that means, from my way of thinking, we're going to have a pretty epic, pretty thrilling contest on Wednesday night.
With this Barca side in general throughout the season, you mentioned Messi's been playing a lot of football over the summer, albeit charity football, and he continues to pick up these knocks and these niggly injuries. Are we going to see Barca for the first real time having to really rest Lionel Messi throughout a season, to not have him however much he wants to playing football? And how much is Neymar going to be expected to pick up that slack if that happens?
Well, the first answer is that I think even beyond his, in fact, I don't think we know that even beyond the fact that he has these repetitive pulls and strains in his thigh muscles, Gerardo Martino has said that one of his principal aims is to show better squad husbandry during the season, so that if Barcelona come to, you know, the trophy handouts in April and May, that they're in much better physical form than they've been in either of the last two seasons, but most particularly last season when Bayern trampled all over them. Now, it's only step one, identifying that and promising to treat it. Step two is far more difficult in understanding how to do it. But the first thing he did before Leo Messi was injured at all was to say during the Levante game, this game is won, he's played very well, he's coming off, and he did. So I think it's a partial answer to your question that irrespective of the injuries, they're going to try to wring a good deal less out of Messi's body and mind, which he will not enjoy, which he will probably object to. But if his season and then his summer ends with him lifting trophies, obviously I'm talking about the Champions League and the World Cup, then there'll be precious few complaints from him. And you phrased it about Neymar picking up the slack. I don't view it like that at all. I think Neymar is involved in a process of fairly intense adaptation. There's been a lot made of his anemia and the fact that he's lost 7 kilos, which he's trying to put back because principally it's muscle loss. There's very little fat on him, full stop. But it's a big change for a young man, changing continent, changing language, changing styles of football. He too has got a, you know, principal challenge for the World Cup coming next summer. And therefore, to say to Neymar now, and I'm speaking because having listened to enough of what Tata Martino has said, I don't think that's his idea. Neymar is here to replicate what made him successful and famous. Neymar is here. Let me just say they're being very careful that nobody, including Neymar himself, tramples on Messi's toes. And I think that that's a healthy idea, given that Messi has been far and away the greatest player of the last, in my view, 25 years already. And he may be on route to becoming the great player of all time. If you've got him and you buy a new superstar, you're very careful about how you implement him. So Neymar's here to learn, to adapt, to aid the team, to win trophies, to stand out. either on or off the record, to be asked to take the slack for Messi. I don't think you'll find many sensible people saying yes to that.
Just finally, Graham, I know we've had plenty of your time already today, but it is the last week, if you will, of the transfer window. All wraps up come Monday next week. But for this story of Gareth Bale continues to go around. I've seen pictures of a stage being built, being prepared for his kind of arrival in Madrid and whatnot. I mean, Tottenham are saying now there are other bids. Are Madrid starting to get slightly frustrated with this? I mean, do they start to feel they're getting played about now by Daniel Levy, right?
They're not starting to get frustrated. They've been immensely frustrated for weeks and weeks and weeks. I think part of that deserves no sympathy because they are an impatient club. Part of it does deserve sympathy in that it is enormously difficult. And I think we talked about it last time we were on air. I don't mean this pejoratively, but it is immensely difficult dealing with Daniel Levy. Now, that's to his club's benefit, so it's no word of criticism. But every single person who I've come across who's had to deal with him or around him says that it's brutally hard. So the frustration has been for weeks and weeks. What is unquestionable in my mind, given the sources that have told me this, that in at minimum verbally, Spurs and Real Madrid have reached an agreement for some considerable time, a week, 10 days at least. What Spurs said was that they wanted, quite legitimately, time to spend some of the money on replacements before it became a confirmed fact that they were raking in something in the region of £90 million. And therefore, the move by Chelsea to pinch Willian just right at the last moment has been the principal reason why Real Madrid haven't been able to complete the announcement of Bale. Now, in the meantime, again, I believe what Spurs have leaked out, that there is another bid. I believe the other club is Manchester United. My understanding is that it's a very, very strong effort at the last minute to sign Gareth Bale. I have not spoken to Bale nor his agent, and therefore I won't predict to you now whether Manchester United can turn this around at the last minute. But when deals go on forever and ever and are not sealed, there people do crack, people do change their mind, deals can fall apart. There are people who work around the marketplace around Manchester United who are saying, take this very seriously. But at the moment, the ball is on the goal line. The goal line says Real Madrid, and the ball is very nearly in their net, just not quite yet. And for anybody who started his junior reporting career in the city of Glasgow and saw Mo Johnson being paraded at Celtic Park, his old club, wearing a Celtic top, and then saw Graham Souness and David Murray a matter of a couple of days later signing him and parading him in a Rangers jersey at Ibrox, it teaches you to say, let's wait until the ink is dry and Gareth Bale's deal to Madrid before we say it's done.
You talk about it being on the goal line, Graham. I think we might need some goal line technology come the end of the window just to make sure that it's that it's crossed the line. But we will call upon your expertise, I'm sure, later on in the season. For now, we really appreciate you taking the time to have a chat with us as the La Liga season continues, and we look forward to catching up with you again very soon indeed, mate.
Enjoy your football, man. Talk soon.
You too. Graham Hunter there joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things La Liga football. And of course, Atletico Madrid, that fantastic start to the season. They take on Barcelona later on this week in the Super Cup second leg. And of course, the Gareth Bale transfer saga continues to be talked about. Real Madrid last night getting a 1-0 win against Granada. Just a 1-0 win, though. That's all it was. And, you know, as well, though, with Barca, you look at Barca without Lionel Messi against Malaga on the weekend, and it just wasn't as convincing, nowhere near as convincing as it could be. As it usually is with Lionel Messi, it's not the trouncing that we normally expect.